You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say,
get your money at the bank too.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it must be done, it has to get done, and it just cannot be cannot be put off another day. You will get it done, and you will do it safely. You'll wear your mask. You'll keep your distance. You'll do whatever is necessary to make that happen. And that's why we appreciate you. That's right. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you could not listen to this program live and you want to listen to some of the programs we've had in the past, just go to timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that, and the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m., 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and all times are going to give our Eastern Times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, hosted by Brother Jahad Ahmed, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia. From 8 to 9 p.m., from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10 p.m., Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 on Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday, and today is Friday, so once 8 p.m. comes, you know what time that is. That's right, it's Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, go online, check out the products that are produced by us. Also, to support the concept of a supermarket being established here in the Atlanta area. And by doing that, and we getting others, and maybe a supermarket in your area, in your city, it's a damn shame that in many cities, predominantly us, we don't have a supermarket. We don't have other outlets where our brothers and sisters who grow food, who have produce, can take that to that market, or any other food items that we have produced. It's a shame. It really is. It's a shame. So, Africa for the Africans.
Brother Bomani Taihemba, who has been taking our people to the motherland for many years. He will be taking a group April 2nd through April 12th, going to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th, Ghana. May 24th to June 5th. And then November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. And then finally at the end of the year, December 24th to January 5th, 2022, going to Ghana. If you want to see previous tours, you want to see pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Or give Brother Bomani Taihemba a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything that you need to make that trip of a lifetime is going to be right there for you. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Baba Rinoco. Now, Rinoco will have a trip upcoming. I know I saw that later on in the year, and I'll announce that. But he does have a Zoom coming up next week, a webinar next week, Friday and Saturday, March 26th and 27th, and it's a continuation of Journey to Nubia. And if you know Baba Rinoco, this is part three. You'll have a beautiful array of pictures documenting the things. And many of the pictures, probably most all of the pictures, will be the ones that he has taken. So Friday the 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern to 9:30. 8 p.m. to 9:30 Eastern. And then that Saturday morning, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday morning. So go to his website, drrinoco.com, drrinoco.com, and sign up for it. I think it's $25 for both days. It's well worth it. It's great information. Well worth it. Habesha Incorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africans Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habesha, they have another program, Repatriation Initiative, an 18-month step-by-step training program where you do some work here and then you go to the motherland, you know. So go online to HabeshaIncorporated.org and check out the programs that it has, the Sustainable Seeds, the Habesha Works, the Black to Our Roots, the Golden Growers, the Urban Green Jobs, the Kashi Project that is already happening in Ghana. So, HabeshaIncorporated.org. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. I want to thank Baba Akima for being my guest this past Wednesday to talk about what's happening with Us Lifting Us and how you can become involved and how important Us Lifting Us is. So, their Thursday night broadcast once again. Every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/uslifting us. And if you want to call to listen, you can do so by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Every Thursday night, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. Every Thursday night, Us Lifting Us. They had Sister Bayina Bello on last night. Great. Beautiful. So, Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. Fine array of smoothies and health drinks and so forth. And that's Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. On weekends, they serve vegan food. They have a caterer come in with delicious vegan food. So, yep. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia is now on the main strip in the Greenbrier Mall, just around the corner from where she was in the food court in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, greeting cards, postcards, t-shirts, figurines, you name it. She'll have it in some bigger store. And I know she's had book reviews and people coming in to talk. In fact, I was supposed to do a presentation before COVID hit. And so once they're starting to ease up, and I want to do that, so I'll contact. I got to go to Greenbrier Mall and see Mama Nia. That's right. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, Magazinde Ajamu. He also has a coffee bar there. He utilized all of that space very well. It looks great. It's a safe space for us to meet and to do all kinds of good things. Go to the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The Ledge Group. Ledge stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group. The brothers and sisters in the Ledge, they have a program. Enter the raffle to win a Tanzanian African safari. There's a raffle you can win. Go to theledgegroup.com and click on it. There's a raffle that they have. And also, too, of course, they deal with the four areas of for human existence, of food, water, clothing, and shelter. And they have over 12 projects, 6 countries, and over 170 people employed, and over 260 members. You should become a member of the Ledge Group. Also, too, if you become a member of the Ledge Group, you have the opportunity to buy land in Africa, opportunity to buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. $250 an acre. The Ledge Group. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, contact Sister Shelley Amonsett at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. That is Sun Goddess Scent, your one-stop natural shop in Jonesboro, on Jonesboro Road in Forest Park. Sister Gabby with Sanjay Dash Haiti, the outstanding work she's been doing in the island of Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island. And that is Sanjay Dash Haiti. Brothers and sisters, go online. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay Dash Haiti. Akaban Institute. Akaban Institute. P.O. Box 10786. Make your check or money order out to Akaban Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Or use PayPal or Cash App. If you use Cash App, go to Cash App and put in the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your contributions. You can make it ongoing. Okay, but these brothers and sisters deserve to be supported. You know it. Akaban House, if you want to get one of Baba Baruti's books, go to akabanhouse.com. Akabanhouse.com. I'm going to read from the Inye Sesem, one of Baba Baruti's books on daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Well, let me finish up. I went someplace else. Let me go to Bibi Atumi. I've been saying, brothers and sisters, go to bibiatumi.com. A-B-I-B-I-T-U Atumi M-I.com. Bibiatumi.com. Tomorrow, in fact, he has a Black History Month festival. Black History Month Film Festival, and it's still up March today, going to the 21st. Go to bibiatumi.com. I don't see some of the movies, some of the films, But yeah, it was the film festival. But tomorrow morning, the seminar series, Saturday seminar series, tomorrow morning, the title will be Reparations, Redistribution. The question, reparations, redistribution. So check out bbatumi.com. That's early in the morning. That's 9 a.m. 9 a.m. Eastern time, 8 Central, 7 Mountain or 6 Pacific time. But of course, it's coming out of Ghana, West Africa. Okay. Brother Cambon is doing the presentation. Obadale Cambon is doing the presentation. That's tomorrow. Brothers and sisters, go to bbatumi.com. Make it a favorite and constantly go there for all kinds of good information. Become a member and so forth. bbatumi.com. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 18th. Slaves equal blackness. Convicts also equal slaves. Therefore, the connection between slavery and blackness became easily translated into an idea of black criminality. The free American African population became more than just troublesome. They became dangerous, and dangerous people need to be imprisoned, which becomes white's ultimate solution to what to do with free American African people. Sharshi McIntyre. Now that the drug laws are changing, but the need to incarcerate American African men, women, and children has not. And the school to prison pipeline is not at this time producing enough victims. We will really begin to see the return of debtors' prisons. How quickly forget that a significant number of the indentured servants who were shipped here came from a multiple debtors' prisons in England and elsewhere in Europe. Debt has become a very sophisticated legal instrument of control. The bankruptcy laws keeping the average person from behind bars are under systematic and relentless attack. Commendably, debtors' prisons are returning. Not unsuspectingly, Mississippi currently has more people locked up for this reason, but it is merely a matter of time before every other Urugu state, territory, and country follows suits with debtors' prisons everywhere and has with everything else devised to contain, oppress, and destroy threats. We can expect to become an inmate of choice. Adhering to the wisdom can help. Nana Malcolm X, his father, Reverend Earl Little, warned us that credit is the first step into debt and back into enslavement. Soon, we're going to find that the unrealness of credit is worse than the accusations of the worthlessness of cash. Regardless, there is a method to this madness for them and for them against us. Affirm, I know how the mind of Europeans sees me. Affirm, I know how the mind of Europe sees me. That's important, isn't it? Ashe. March 19th. Our struggle has always been revolutionary in nature. Reform is not a solution for us. There is no reforming of the Ma'afa. We are in a state of constant war. The constant is European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy, oppression and exploitation in all its infinite varieties. It must be destroyed. The essence of African revolutionary activity is to destroy that which destroys us and to rebuild within an African context and an African tradition. One of the operational orders of the African ethos is the survival of our people. We have survived because of our imagination, inventiveness, and spiritual energy. Nana Akweku. War is not fantasy. In all probability, there will be no Oscar award-winning final gunfight showdown where you go out in a blaze on a silver screen, as the last martyrs dodging a hail of enemy bombs, booby traps, and bullets, while shooting so skillfully that every one bullet you expend while in flight, somersaulting and diving through enemy lines, sporting a full-length gold line, mud-cloth trench coat, flipped open to reveal an oversized neon ankh dangling from a necklace of made of hardback African literary classics, picks off 10 of their best black ops trained attackers. That's right. Let me go back to the open to reveal a neon-sized ankh dangling from a necklace of roped bronze-plated cowrie shells atop a bulletproof vest made of hardback African literary classics. Picks off a 10. Boy, Papa Rudy. Revolution is not play. It is not a game. It is not showtime. As Nana Kantu so accurately pointed out, it is not a gig for crybabies or daydreamers. It's real. Affirm, I'm a revolutionary, not a reformer. I do not try to mend evil. I act to destroy what hurts our people and builds what is good for us. Affirm, I am a revolutionary, not a reformer. I do not try to mend evil. I act to destroy what hurts our people and build what is good for us. March 20th. Nothing is so difficult that diligence cannot master. African proverb. To complain about something that has happened to us every minute of every day or every year that we have been in this presence of evil is a meaningless waste of energy unless that energy is being directly, functionally, and efficiently injected into the thought and actions, which leads to immediately stopping this assault and turning it into a future impossibility. It is only lazy losers who always want to forgive and forget or complain and do nothing. Be not confused by the seemingly liberal or radicalness of their words. There is no meaningful difference between hopeless fantasizers and constant complainers. Warriors, of course, are neither. Guided by righteousness, moved by rage, warriors are charged by the ancestors in all that is good and right to directly, functionally, and efficiently do this work from the heart. And those of us who know them, as a result of witnessing their consistency and vision in their courage and fortitude, have the utmost respect for their work, are fully aware that to be this kind of servant of the people requires so much of them that they unwittingly become divine. Affirm, I am diligent. Affirm, I am diligent. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought for warriors. For warriors. The warrior's mentality. Francis Cress Welsing's birthday was yesterday. And this being, I know next Friday I'm going to have Brother Akil Parker on. And this being Women's Month, we're going to talk about Asada Shakur and other sisters in our struggle. Give praise to and honor to the sisters who stood by our side or who made a way when there was no way or who took the lead, like Queen Nzinga. Frances Cress, of course, she was born in Chicago. And she was born in 1935, March 18th, 1935. She passed a few years ago, January 2nd of 2016. Man, yeah, I remember that. I remember that very well when she passed. I went to the her homecoming memorial at a church in D.C. And of course, Tony Browder, Ray Winbush, Marimba Ani, oh gosh, so many others. just, it was a beautiful service, very fitting. And of course, Frances, Conrad didn't make it, and Conrad made his transition last year. Love Conrad. Conrad, I consider a dear friend. And Frances Cress Welsing's birthday, and we need to honor her and always remember her and hold her up, go to her work. You know, many people did not understand where she was coming from, and I'm quite sure they should be able to understand now when you look at what has been going on. The Crest theory of color confrontation, the ISIS papers, that racism is in all areas of people activity. All areas of people activity. So, yeah. We honor Frances Cress Welsing. So if you can, you can go online to YouTube and put in Frances and hear her on the Phil Donahue Show and various other programs. Hear her smacking what you call upside the head, William Shockley and his race superiority theories. I loved it. Loved it. I think that was on Tony Brown's journal, that particular piece, I believe. So Frances Cress Welsing. Yeah. Also today, before I get to my guests, who knew Conrad World very personally, but today, back in 1966, which is something I'll never forget because this is March Madness, and I've always said that March Madness is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on. That's right. Making plenty of money off the backs of unpaid African people. These folks going to make plenty of money. Billions of dollars in the next couple of weeks. Billions of dollars will be betted on in these games, in these March Madness games. But in 1966, as a young boy, as a teenager, I will never forget watching five brothers on the floor for Texas Western, now Texas El Paso, UTEP, beat Kentucky with Pat Riley. Beat them 72-65, 55 years ago. Never forget it. Never forget it. Five brothers. There's a movie called Glory Road. Check the movie out. Go to YouTube. You might be able to get it there or whatever how you get streaming. Glory Road, it needs to be played today for you. It's a good movie, but it's very important historically. Neville Shedd was part of that team, and Neville Shedd worked in Milwaukee back in the 80s, early 80s. I had a chance to know him and talk about that. That is very historical. Loved it. Five brothers, you know. And, of course, I hated Adolph Rupp. And they didn't get a brother on Kentucky's team. Another 10 years. Yeah. Brothers and sisters, we're going to talk today about the scramble for Africa. My guest is Brother Mickey Dean. He is the international chairperson for the National Black United Front. He is one of the members of the Kansas City chapter, one of the strongest chapters of the National Black United Front. And Brother Mickey Dean, how you doing?
I'm well, Brother Hotep. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. Go ahead. How can you hear me? That's the key.
I can hear you. And Oshie, let me just begin by saying that I have that very same memory of that Texas Western game. I was sitting there watching that game with my dad. I was a teenager. And just like you, we hated Adolph Rupp. We hated Alabama. I grew up in rural Georgia. And at that time, when college basketball was on television, all you saw were the SEC teams, all white teams. We didn't get to see the buzzer. And so, man, you just can imagine how we felt when Texas Western won that game. So I just wanted to share that with you, man.
I appreciate that. Same feeling. Right on, man. I tell you, I was elated. you know, somebody, you always hear talk about somebody, you know, what incident that happened to you when you knew you were black? Well, you know, I grew up in Milwaukee, like you grew up in Georgia. You know, you always going to know that from the very beginning you see your surroundings. You know what time it is, you know, unless you've been sheltered. You know? So I knew that, but that was one time that I really felt the pride of being black, to see them cats do that, you know, on that stage. And then right after that, of course, UCLA began their long stream of national championships. But that one moment of 1966, you know, those brothers, and of course, once again, brothers and sisters, go to that movie, Glory Road, that came out about 15 years ago, whatever. But yeah, that was deep, man. Yeah. And I also, too, I think right before you came on, I talked about Frances. Her birthday was yesterday, and this being Women's Month. But even if it wasn't Women's Month, I would announce acknowledges Frances Cress Welsing's birthday for what she has done for us as African people, at least enlightening us into and giving us a concept of what we could think about in terms of how we are being treated and why we are being treated this way. Now, a lot of times we don't have a damn clue, do we?
Yeah. She's one of our great warrior sisters. And of course, we had the opportunity to host the sister here in Kansas City at one of our National Black United Front conventions several years ago. Dr. Wilson was very close to Conrad to the front. And so you're very right in upholding her memory.
Oh, right on. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, you know, we now talk about the scramble for Africa. And I'm going to play after the break a piece that I got from the Pan-African Federalist Movement that I've been playing, basically saying that we need a united Africa. And this explains it so deeply. And what we're going to talk about is the reason why we need to have a united Africa, because of how we're being played. And, you know, when you look at a map and you see the lines, a political map, those are not lines that Africans drew up. Those lines you see come out of the Berlin Conference of 1884-85, when Europeans, no Africans were invited in Berlin, Germany. They, you know, they agreed amongst themselves about who's going to get what and how much and so forth. And those lines that you see today are those lines that were drawn then. And sometimes those lines were drawn with the intent to cause dissension and division within those African nations so they could keep them divided and warring amongst themselves. But the most important thing that the Europeans have done to Africa is exploited for the mineral wealth of Africa, which is still today more than any place else on the planet. You know, that's why China's there big. And of course, that's what we're going to talk about. The scramble, the new, I ain't going to say new scramble, you know, but I remember being in Kansas City. And sister did a presentation on the scramble for Africa, you know, at a National Black United Front conference, and talking about the different entities that are on the continent, you know. So really, all talk about what's happening should be over. The main discussion right now is how are we going to come together to kick their ass off the continent. And us coming into it and unifying and controlling the education and all the other entities, but more importantly, the land and the resources, you know? So we don't have to Go ahead, Mickey.
No, I was going to say, you're absolutely right, and hopefully we'll have a chance to discuss that at some point in the short, exactly how that's going to get done and what we need to be doing now to facilitate this new independence movement in Africa. But I guess we can talk about that a little bit after you do your piece here.
Okay, we sure will. There's a, you know, Mickey sent me a piece, and I think this is just dynamic. It Gravitas Plus sent this out, and if you go to Gravitas Plus, they have a lot of good stuff, don't they? I don't know if you've seen that, but they do. Yeah, they have a lot of good stuff, and I'll probably be playing some of their stuff, and you know, in, as time goes on. But this is the Scramble for Africa.
Today we'll talk about Africa, once seen by Europe as the antithesis of civilization, the heart of darkness, in the words of a certain Joseph Conrad. Centuries later, Africa remains ignored. It makes news for its conflicts, poverty, and exoticism. For the longest time, the world saw it as a lost cause. Then one country saw opportunity and thus began a new race for Africa, not very different from the scramble of the 19th century when colonial Britain and France wanted raw materials, slaves, and geopolitical influence. Now, in the 21st century, global powers are in more or less the same race. China, the United States, India, the European Union, Japan, Israel, Canada, all of these countries are in the race for Africa. And one country is emerging as the clear winner. Hello and welcome to Gravitas Plus. I'm Palki Sharma Upadhyay, and this is Africa, a continent of 54 sovereign states, 17% of the world's population, 9.6% of the global oil output, 90% of the world's platinum supply, 90% of the world's cobalt supply, half of the world's gold supply, two-thirds of the world's manganese, 35% of the world's uranium, 75% of the world's coltan, and 54 votes in the United Nations General Assembly. This is what makes Africa so attractive and makes the continent a battleground for global powers. There are numerous fronts: investment, infrastructure, military power, diplomacy, soft power, trade, geopolitics. Every country has its own interest in Africa. In 2016, Israel began its scramble for the continent. Benjamin Netanyahu became the first Israeli prime minister to visit Africa in 50 years. What did he want? Votes. In favor of Israel and against Palestine in the United Nations resolutions. Africa and Israel share similar histories, he said. Israel went on to sponsor solar, water, and agricultural technologies. In the same year, 2016, Senegal co-sponsored a UN resolution. It condemned the construction of illegal Jewish settlements in the West Bank. What did Israel do? It cancelled the Mashav drip irrigation project. And this is just one example. Here's another one. The European Union has pledged more than $54 billion in sustainable investment for Africa. What does the EU want? Access to the African market of 1.3 billion people. Brussels has negotiated free trade agreements with at least 40 African countries. But does this ensure a balanced two-way trade? It doesn't. And no country has a bigger interest in Africa than China. China is funding 1 in 5 infrastructure projects in Africa. It is building every third one. Africa has an infrastructure deficit, and China has a signed checkbook. Starting 2005, China has invested at least $2 trillion in Africa. It built 6,200 kilometers of railways, including the continent's longest railway line connecting Ethiopia and Djibouti. Beijing has also built the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. What does China get in return? A lot. Geopolitical influence to start with. Beijing is selling its culture, its currency. In Guinea-Bissau, exit signs are written in Mandarin. China has established at least 50 Confucius Institutes across 33 countries. Several African countries use Chinese currency. China also gets a strategic overseas base. In 2017, China built its first overseas base at the Horn of Africa, Djibouti, to be specific. Djibouti connects the Mediterranean Sea to the Indian Ocean via the Suez Canal. The base has the capacity to accommodate 10,000 troops. China also gets a market to dump its goods. China is Africa's largest trading partner. Chinese trade has increased 40-fold in the last two decades. At least 10,000 Chinese firms operate in Africa. This is according to a McKinsey study. Africa has resources and China has access. Did you know that a third of China's investments in Africa are in the mining sector? And finally, it gets to debt trap Africa. But here's the thing. China is not the only country investing in this continent. It's not even the biggest. The United States is Africa's largest investor. It accounts for $54 billion of FDI stock. There are 600 American companies operating in South Africa alone. And this, even after the U.S. president called Africa this. For the longest time, Africa was nothing but a war zone for Washington. It has over 7,000 troops deployed in the continent. They're spread across some 13 African countries, including Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Libya, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, South Sudan, Somalia, and Tunisia. For the U.S., Africa was a continent for counter-terrorism operations. What happened then? Why is the U.S. suddenly interested in Africa? The answer is this. For the U.S., Africa is now a new front to take on China, and Washington is now fighting it out for power and influence. An article on the U.S. State Department website reads, and I quote, "Africa is the continent of the future. Thus, we need to make the most of its potential. By 2050, its population will more than double to 2.2 billion people, with over 60% under the age of 25. Where is Africa's interest in all of this? Also, what about India? What role does India play in this continent? New Delhi's ties with Africa date back to the time of Mahatma Gandhi. India was part of the Bandung Project of 1955. New Delhi supported Africa's anti-colonial struggles. It supported the liberalization movements in Ghana, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau. India also raised the issue of racism in South Africa. It will be unfair to say, though, that India's newfound interest in Africa has nothing to do with China. In 2018, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi toured key African states just ahead of Chinese President Xi Jinping's visit. In 2018, India decided to open 18 new embassies in Africa. India has defense partnerships with Zambia, Nigeria, Ghana, Ethiopia, Botswana, Uganda, Mozambique, and Namibia. New Delhi is currently training African military. Indian company Airtel is a dominant telecom firm in Africa. New Delhi is offering 50,000 scholarships to African students. Despite everything, India is far behind China in the race for Africa. China's Belt and Road Initiative has sealed its hold on Africa. If in the 1900s Africa was colonized with force, in 2020 it is being trapped by loans. China accounts for 14% of sub-Saharan debt. In Kenya, the volume of Chinese loans is six times that of France, which is the country's second largest creditor. And Sri Lanka can tell you what happens when Chinese loans are not repaid. China is looking to capture Africa. It has a strong diaspora. It is spending big money. It is selling its movies, culture, and currency. China extracts raw materials. It manufactures products with them and sells them back to this continent. Does this remind you of something? What did the British do in India? In the 19th century, the rivalry between Britain and France fueled Africa's colonization. In the 21st century, the trade war between the United States and China is hastening the same. Just like the 19th century, there are numerous countries in the scramble for Africa. And just like the 19th century, there is nothing in it for Africa.
Gravitas Plus, co-presented by Skoda. Simply clever.
There is nothing in it for Africans. There's no real benefit for African people. This scramble for Africa, which has been going on for centuries, and even though Africa has been plundered for centuries, it still, as you heard, has more resources than anybody else, than any other country. In fact, some of the countries have no resources. China, Japan, they don't have no natural resources. India, they don't. But to me, Africa should be controlled by Africans, and the resources are Africans, and they should be divvied out to other countries at fair market value prices. That's what they don't want to happen. That's why France has that stranglehold on many African countries. I hate the French, but I hate the British even more. And I know I'm saying a harsh word, but when you realize what has been done to African people by these colonizers, you can't help but, if you have a love and a respect for Africa and African people, you can't help but have that disdain and disgust for these colonizers. Go ahead, brother Mickey.
Yeah, Brother Oshie, and I know I'm probably speaking to the choir with your audience because I'm sure your audience is well aware, but just in terms of some background, The Berlin Conference, you mentioned it earlier. It was mentioned in the piece. I think it's really important that people understand the significance of the Berlin Conference, which, as you mentioned, the European powers decided to divide China and create those artificial boundaries. Two resources that I highly recommend that gives us an insight on the importance of this question. One is Kwame Nkrumah. Of course, Kwame Nkrumah was the first president of Ghana, one of the first countries to gain their independence. His book, Africa Must Unite, is sort of the similar work on the importance of the unity of Africa. He called for a United States of Africa. In fact, he called for a socialist United States of Africa with one common currency, one common military, none of those artificial borders. And so it's really a good book, even though that book was written many, many decades ago. It's really a good book to understand the importance of a unified Africa. Another important book that he wrote was Neocolonialism, the Highest Stage of Imperialism, because one of the problems we have in Africa now is that these countries are nominally independent. They've all gone through their independence movements, but basically they are ran by leaders who still have ties to their European and American and Western masters. And so what happens is that these conditions in Africa are perpetuated because these neocolonial governments still bow to their Western masters. And in this book, Nkrumah really speaks to and gives a good understanding of that whole neocolonial process. So I think it's important that you know, everybody understand the current conditions on the continent and the fact that, you know, people that say, but wait a minute, all those governments in Africa are black governments, so, you know, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that all of these governments are beholden to the imperialist powers, and so they're probably as almost as bad as when there was direct occupation.
Yeah, especially because of the training of the people who are in charge. They're Western trained. They're trained to follow suit for France and England and Germany and whoever else. In fact, many of the countries, from my understanding, and for how I look, when I look at like South Africa is still run by Caucasians. Yes, I know what Nelson Mandela did. I know he was the president. I know they have an African president today. In fact, the only strong person in South Africa to me is Luima, who's talking about gaining serious control of South Africa. But my contention is, if you are in control of the money and you are in control of the military, you're in control. I don't give a damn how many dark faces you have in high places. You're in control. And that's what's happening in South Africa. But not only South Africa, the same thing is Namibia. Those Germans who took what is then called Southwest Africa, now Namibia, they are still in control, you know? And so go ahead, Mickey.
Well, if you look at how European people operate, and that's everywhere they go, you see it here in this country. What happened in Africa was in the 50s, the independence movement was very strong. Because remember that once upon a time, there was direct colonialism in Africa. In other words, the white governments actually set up shop in Africa, and they basically ran their colonies themselves. But as the independence movement began to grow, the Europeans began to understand that they had to do something because this mass movement was really becoming overwhelming. And so what they said was that, okay, change the tactics here. We can no longer maintain this direct colonialism with white government set up in this country. The blacks are going to take over. So what we've got to do is make sure that since this is happening, that we control the black people that take over. And you recall that there were some black leaders that said, nope, this is not going to happen. You know, we want independence and we want true independence. Lumumba, Nkrumah, right. Thomas and Corinth.
Right.
And so what happened was the Europeans said, okay, well, we got to get rid of these people because these are not the type of leaders that we want in place. We want Mobutu and all of these type folks. So so that's when neocolonialism developed, which is a new form of colonialism. In other words, the Europeans saw that this movement was gaining strength and that they couldn't hold it back. So what they had to do was to make sure that they identified and propped up the leaders. Now, that's what you see in South Africa. It just happened a lot later in South Africa when the South African movement, really the anti-apartheid movement, really began to take over. And the Dutch said, okay, first thing we got to do is we got to let Mandela out of prison, but we got to make sure that once we let him out, because he's probably going to become the leader, that we basically get him to understand what he can and can't do. All due respect to Nelson Mandela, this brother spent, 27 years in prison for what he believed. So all due respect for Mandela. And I understand that there's a real difference in running a liberation movement and then trying to govern, right? But as you said, what the Dutch did and the British in South Africa said, well, we're going to have to turn over this political apparatus to the ANC. Not the economic apparatus, not the gold mines.
Exactly. Right?
But we're going to turn over the political apparatus. And so what you have in people talk about the anti-apartheid is over in South Africa. The apartheid system was primarily an economic system, not a racial system. It was an economic system that used race to enforce it, but it was an economic system. And so the economic apartheid did not change with the political change. So you still basically have economic apartheid in South Africa. And the brother you mentioned, Malema, he understands that, and that's why he's continuing to fight.
Right.
So I just wanted to put that out there.
Right on. And another thing before we go to a break is that, you know, in South Africa, you had recently a number of South African Africans, you know, killing Africans from other parts of the continent coming there to South Africa getting jobs because the educational system in South Africa did not train brothers and sisters to get these kinds of jobs. So the brothers and sisters from Nigeria and Kenya and Ghana specifically were going to South Africa. That's why they said something about some xenophobia. That's bull. The bottom line is that the brothers and sisters in South Africa were not educated, and that's the fault of that government, but more importantly, the Caucasians in South Africa who do still control it, and then the brothers and sisters who had the abilities coming there and getting those jobs. You know, this is madness is what it is. It's constantly divide and conquer. I'm going to take a break. Brother Mickey, when we come back from the break, I'm going to play another piece that I play consistently, dealing with us coming together and, you know, why Pan-Africanism needs to be seriously implemented, not discussed, implemented on the continent because of the kind of resources that we have at our disposal. We mentioned that in the Gravitas piece, and we'll talk about it again and other issues. And so, brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 10 to 12 Central. No, I'm not going to go through that. I'm just going to go through this. The other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. That is followed by from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Line with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisi Y. Ayan. And on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday, from 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I'm going to play this right quick, and I know our listeners have heard this before, but of course, it's definitely in line with what we're talking about today, the Scramble for Africa, with our guest, Brother Mickey Dean, out of Kansas City, with the Kansas City National Black United Front.
Talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awaking. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow an Africa and a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our aspirations, dreams? And have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with is, what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination. You, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism. You, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army. You are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled, because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under U.S. war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come, because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African-American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent, to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation to give our people power. This is the time.
The time is now. The time is now. In fact, really, the time was yesterday, but we'll deal with it right now. Once again, my guest is Brother Mickey Dean of the Kansas City Chapter National Black United Front, and the international chairperson for the National Black United Front. And we're talking about the scramble for Africa. We got people on the hold. Brother Mickey, we're going to make some comments, and then we'll go to some questions from the people who are on hold and those who are listening. If you are on hold, you hit star twice. That lets you in. If you're listening and want to join the conversation, dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. All right.
One quick comment, Brother Oshie, before we go to the phones. I was listening to that. It's a very powerful piece, by the way.
Yes, it is.
And I just want to keep in mind that a lot of people, a lot of sisters and brothers in this country who have that entrepreneurial spirit. I've talked to some of them that who talked about going to Africa, but the problem with some people is that they're going to Africa with the same mindset that a lot of Europeans went there. They feel like they can make money there, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's basically, you know, what their objective is, not so much liberating the continent from this whole imperialist grip, but basically joining in the process. And so I think that we need a certain amount of education of sisters and brothers about, and that's why I referenced Nkrumah's book, Africa Must Unite, because it's important the type of political, social, economic systems that are set up on the continent so that you don't have black people just replicating what the Europeans have done. Right. Because that won't benefit the masses of African people. So I just want to point out that, yeah, we do need sisters and brothers with skills and talent to go back to the continent, but not go back to the continent to exploit the same way that it's being done now. Not go back to the continent with the mindset that I can make a financial killing here in Africa, but to go back with the spirit of liberation, of independence for the African continents. And that's some of the educational work that we still have to do here, both in this country and on the continent.
I agree. And throughout the diaspora, I think that once that is done, and that should be happening right now, should have been happening yesterday, but once it is done, then you're right that the people understand clearly that our salvation is in Africa. It is not here in Mississippi or Georgia or Atlanta. No, our salvation and the future for African people is on the continent. A independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign continent for African people. You know, even in that piece, Gravita's piece, when she said these are sovereign nations, yeah, in word, but not in practice, because colonialism is still very entrenched, and neocolonialism, which is, of course, the issue, is very entrenched on the continent of Africa. Brothers and sisters, if you want to join this conversation, hit star twice if you're on the queue, or dial 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, 646. 646, good afternoon. Good afternoon, 646.
What's happening, Oshie?
I'm doing well, Jay. How are you today?
Doing good, man. I was just listening to you and your guests, man. Hey, the bottom line is this. Until we get to the point to where we're going to go over to the motherland, kick all of these crackers and the Chinese and anybody else who's over there, take over and build, we're just going to be in the same quagmire. I mean, it's just that plain and simple. I mean, you look at what happened with Mandela. Case in point, how do we as intelligent people who have a understanding of history don't understand and realize that that man was going to go in South Africa and do what he did? So now that he's dead and replaced, you got basically the same type of Negroes there doing what they do, which is do the bidding for their master. That's all. It's that plain and simple. Now, if you want to be honest about it, the basic conditions of the South African people have not really improved that greatly. And one of the things that you really don't hear because of the way the media is what it is, the uprising and the constant fight that's going on by the young people over there for better opportunities and things of that nature. So, I mean, look, man, the bottom line is we got to go over there and start using a burning necktie and just move forward.
The African burning necktie.
I mean, that's just the reality, man. I mean, it's unfortunate that we don't want to think like that because of that Christian nonsense. But, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example of how it goes and how it gets down. You know, over in Ghana, they talking about they're not going to give their chocolate away, their cocoa away no more, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there really hasn't been that much of an uprise and a say so far. But let's be very, very honest, and let's be very, very clear. You know it's coming. And there's going to be a lot of heads busted. There's going to be a lot of killing. There's going to be a lot of destruction over that cocoa. But we don't want to address it, and we don't want to deal with it, and we don't want to see it for what it really is. I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but it is. It's just the reality of what the deal is. A lot of people are going to get killed over there, over that cocoa. And we ain't going to be the ones doing the killing. We're going to be the ones getting killed. Now, how is that fair and righteous to us as a people who that's our land, who that's our product? I mean, these are the things that, in all honesty, we never want to deal with and we never want to address.
That, you know, Jay, I hear you, man, and that's the sad part about it, that, you know, it is ours, but yet we don't control it. It is ours, but yet we don't utilize it for our benefit. We don't produce nothing. I that was so sad for me, the many times I've been to Ghana particularly, that we don't manufacture nothing. We don't produce nothing. We have the raw materials. All that cocoa, like, and I mentioned this before, I'm sitting in a cocoa farm and I'm looking over it, and it's vast. But all of that goes to Europe to be produced and then sold back to Ghana. Then you see the sisters on the streets of Ghana with chocolates on top of their head, you know, dodging cars and so forth, selling it. Cadbury's, Nestle's, Hershey's, Mars, all of them.
And we don't talk about it. We don't. No. We as a people here in America should never be in a position with the skills that we have to allow for these things to happen on the continent. It should never be that way. You know, I always say this, and I'll say this till I die, that these so-called divine nine, these muckety-muckster Negro fraternities and sororities, have all of the skills necessary to go about the business at hand, to go anywhere in Africa and build Africa up. But they're so busy here trying to build up the white man's thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if you noticed what happened with this young sister that the white man hired, and they banged her for something that she said about the Chinese and the Asian community 10 years ago. Now, here it is. She's 27 years old, as talented as they come, and now there's a possibility that sister may not even have a career.
Right. I saw a bit of that. I didn't get the whole gist of it, but I saw some of that, and I was like, wow. You know, they.
But where are we as African people to embrace her,
right,
and to use her skill set to make it sure that she won't go hungry?
Yeah.
Nah, we don't do that, and that's what we're gonna have to change. There's no industry in this country that we as African people should not be a part of on a real serious level, being able to produce and manufacture on a level to where as we could hire and sustain our people. If you notice, every other group takes a position in the community, finds something that they do, and sell it to everybody else, and use it as a tool to develop their community, develop their family, educate their people, and go about the business at hand. And the perfect example of that is the Chinese. Then you have the Indians. You understand? You have all of these other nationalities that find a niche, feed off of the blacks of African people, if the truth be told, and then go to a level where, as over a period of time, their community is improved, and we as African people still getting a foot in our ass. And we don't understand it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the reason why, because
We're not collective. We're not unified. We don't have a common purpose. Many people think what's most important here is because of what America espouses. America promotes and perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. So you're thinking about what's in it for me. How can I get mine? You don't think collectively. And if we thought collectively, we could do so much. We could do so much for ourselves, even in this country, let alone on the continent and other places in the diaspora. But we don't think that way because we've had hundreds of years being impacted by Europeans with the notion of our inferiority and our inability to do anything. And the belief that they've done everything and we've done nothing. That we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose waiting for them to bring us civilization. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. But that still perpetuates to this very day. So, many of our people would like to blame us for our lack of unity and inability. And I understand that to a degree because it is right there in front of your face. All you got to do is change your damn mind. But the cracker has a vice grip on our minds. And if you understand that tool, once the vice grip is set, you can't pull it apart. Once these crackers have taken control of our minds, it's going to take some effort, some serious introspection, and probably some of the things that hold our minds to where it is. Number one thing, I'm going to say it right here, because I'm going to say it for the rest of the next couple of weeks, is religion, particularly Christianity. Is a great deterrent for us unifying and controlling our resources, controlling our land, and unifying African people. It's Christianity. But there's a knob there's a knob at the end of the handle of that vice grip. And the only way that knob could be turned is you got the right mindset, that you develop consciousness, understanding who you are culturally and historically, and you begin to turn that knob. Now you finally release the vice grip, and you see the European, the Caucasian, for who and what they are, that you don't challenge them because ain't a damn thing we can do about that, but you bring us together.
Brother, Oshie, I love the way that the word cracker rolls off your tongue, man. You should repeat it constantly because it's just a poetic and energetic sound and display of words.
Jay, probably Elliot and Brother Scotty Reed might jump on me, but let me get back to.
Oh man, it's poetic. Okay, brother.
Okay, Jay, thank you, man.
Put me on mute.
Okay.
Hey, Brother Oshie.
Yes, Mickey. I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
Real quick, before you go to your next call, I just want to. Clarify to people that when we talk about the skill set that black folks in this country have and how that could be put to use in Africa as well as the skill set of other people around the diaspora, I don't want people to think that our role is to go over to the continent to liberate the continent. I mean, that's our role. I think that we have to understand what I'm constantly looking for is evidence of this new independence movement on the continent by the Africans there themselves.
Yes.
So they're the ones that got to build and lead this movement. And we talk about how the fact that the young people will be dominating in Africa in terms of the population. There are some independence movements taking place around the continent. They're not united at this point. And I don't think that they are very, very strong at this point, but that's what I'm always looking for. Who on the ground in the continent that's starting to talk about we need a new independence movement? Who are the new Nkrumahs and the new Patrice Lumumbas and the other sisters that are coming forward? And what we need to do is use our skill set to support those movements of African people. Not that we're trying to go there and say we're here to liberate you, but we have some skill sets that can help in this liberation process. But the leadership of that movement has to come from the sisters and brothers on the continent.
I agree, Brother Mickey, and I'm not trying to be presumptuous about us coming there and deliberate. No, and in fact, I agree with that.
and hopefully that I haven't been misunderstood, because I've stated many times that Africa, we can't be like we did when we went there in Liberia. You know, we have been in the United States and been inculcated for a few hundred years. And so some of us who went to Liberia, we had a European mindset, you know, and we thought that we were better than them. And then the Africans thought that they were better than us. And of course, who sold to Caesar? That kind of discourse, of course, are Caucasians, divide and conquer. And so that's why there was such infighting in Liberia, even to this present day. It is still happening that way. So no, we need to go to the continent with our skills and say, we're here to help. We are truly to the fathers, excuse me, we truly are the sons and daughters of Africa. And we're here to help to bring Africa into the prominence that it needs to be a player in the world instead of the pawns that we have become. So I think that I agree with you, Brother Mickey, that no, we're not going to go there and like we can be taken over. No, we don't want to have that kind of mindset, because that is still very divisive. We want to have the mindset that we come in here to help. We come in here to help, you know, build roads, highways, rail systems. We're here to help build African infrastructure, which is very, you know, necessary. I mean, you know, I've been to Africa. I've been to Ghana. I've been to a few other places. I've been in Ghana many times. And what bothers me is that when I first went there, 96, I believe it is, it still looks the same damn way. You know, the roads and everything. I mean, I'm still traveling down a road, Brother Mickey, that goes from Accra to Cape Coast, you know, and there's still parts of that road that you know, that is unpaved, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I understand, Brother O'Shea. I think the span of time of my trip to Ghana, I think we first went in the early 90s, and then I was there with Renoco 2 years ago. And you're right. I mean, there has been some progress, but the infrastructure has not changed considerably, at least given the amount of time that has lapsed since my first trip and my last trip there. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. And so, you know, the resources that Ghana has, the potential that it has, is tremendous. I mean, you know, when you talk about the amount of gold. And so I'm saying, for the Ashanti people, anybody else, the sacrifices that must be made for the good of all Africans, not your tribe. I hate this word tribe. Anyway, the sacrifice that need to be made, that saying that we're one Africa. Yes, we are this group, we're that nation, so forth. That's great. That's fine. But the bottom line is, the Europeans has done to us what he has done to us, not because we're Ashanti, Fanti, Zulu, Mandingo, whatever. They done that to us because we Africans, because we black. They don't give a damn about that. They don't care. All they know is a black face. And they're going to try their best to exploit it or even eliminate it. And so what we must understand is that we come together on that fact of who we are as African people. And the fact of this present day, that we run the whole spectrum of light, bright, and damn near white to blue black. So it's not what you look like, it's what your heart is. It's what your mind is. And are you willing to make sacrifices and to work for African people and to work for African independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty? You know, that's the bottom line for us, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the bottom line for us. I mean, you know, if you know, when the people talk about, you know, what is our end game? What is the end game? You know, and I say the end game is African sovereignty. The end game is African people controlling their land, controlling their wealth, controlling their resources, and producing. You know, I don't know, you know, Brother Mickey, you need to probably look it up. This Caucasian name, Howard Nichols. I think, or Howard Nicholas. But he put a piece out.
he's talking to a group of Caucasians about why Africa must be kept poor. Because if Africa wakens, and then it's going to be a hard time for Europeans. It's going to be a hard time for many countries. Just like France acknowledged that if it wasn't for Africa, you know, they would be poor. In fact, Europe is rich because of Africa. Belgium, little tiny ass, ugly ass Belgium. King Leopold. But that country is rich because of Africa. But Africans are poor. No, Africa ain't poor. We're exploited. But he said, and this is a recent piece. You know, this is not something that was said 30, 40 years ago. This is a much recent piece. Howard Nichols, I think it is. Howard Nichols. I played it on the program some months ago, about the last month maybe, you know, about how he's saying that we must keep Africa in this way because of the resources Africa has, and we need these resources. Some are strategic resources that we need, that we must take from Africa. You know,
Brother Olson, the wealth that Africa has created came to mind just recently with this dust up about is it Meghan and Harry, the British
yes.
royalty?
I
was, you know, first of all, I mean, you got to understand that the Queen of England and the whole royal family's wealth. I mean, their whole wealth comes from
yes.
colonization in Africa.
Yes.
And I know that Meghan and Harry they made some statements about, you know, that Britain needs to take a look at its history and so forth and so on. But what they need to demand is if they really want to be relevant, demand reparations for the wealth that the crown has extracted from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I don't understand why this sister thinks that I don't know what she thought she was marrying into and why she's surprised that all of this stuff is happening to her. But I mean, you know, Britain was, of course, one of the British Empire, of course, was one of the greatest colonizing forces in Africa. And it still controls
yes.
a lot of the country through this Commonwealth. I understand now some of the countries are saying we're getting out of this Commonwealth. But that, you know, if Meghan really wants to wage a war, that's what she needs to wage a war for. I mean, I know she's probably been done wrong over there, but which shouldn't be surprising to her. But that's what came to mind when I was listening to all of this Harry and Meghan stuff. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, the thing about that is that we're not racist. Yes, you are. You're the epitome of it. You went around the world. You said the sun never sets on your damn empire because you went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. You're the biggest colonizer on the planet. The so-called Great Britain. Yes, you are. You're the ultimate of racism and exploitation and colonization. Great Britain. There are others, of course. But to me, and so as I'm listening to that last week on the news, and I'm saying to myself, ain't nobody going to say this? Ain't nobody going to say what it is? You know?
The British royal family races, oh my God.
You know? Yeah, they are. Mama Nabantu.
Greetings, brothers. Thank you for letting me into the call. I believe that in order to make some change, to make the change the mindset of the young people on the continent and as well as here, bringing them into African-centered educational schools, especially the young folks, we can bring some here and we can set up African-centered schools there and educate, because most of them do not know the history. They don't know the meaning of sovereignty, reparations, liberation, colonialism, and neocolonialism, capitalism, and socialism, all of that. And they don't know the history of the founders of this whole movement to liberate Africa. And for me, we got to start from the babies and all the way up to the university level. They need to be educated about the truth of our history in order for them to be groomed into becoming the leaders that we need on the continent. Thank you.
Ashe, thank you, Mama Nabantu, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. Thank you, Mama Nabantu. 447-447. Good afternoon or good evening.
Oh, is that me, Brother Oshie? How are you doing,
Brother? I'm well, Brother Paul. This is Paul from the UK, Brother Mickey. You're on with, I guess it's Brother Mickey Dean. He is a member of the National Black United Front in Kansas City. Go ahead, Brother Paul. How you been, man? Ain't heard from you a while. You been okay?
Brother Ochi, you know, I'm alive, so I heard that.
Listen, under
these conditions, yeah. I have to be grateful. I had a kind of close death in the family.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, when these things happen, you tend to have to bits and pieces to tidy up and, you know, it's never straightforward here.
Yeah,
but anyway, we're alive, so because we're alive, we've got to do better.
Well, I appreciate what you have sent me, brother. I really do. I take a look at it and listen to it. Man, I really do appreciate keeping me abreast on what's happening, Brother Paul. Go ahead with your questions. Or comments.
Yeah. Well, I can't honestly say I heard all the show. I caught the part when your guest, because I was in and out, and I'm working at the moment, but I caught the part where your guest was referring to the Queen of England, and they should pay reparations and so on and so forth. Yeah. You know, one thing I want to put across is for what I understand about this monarchy and how this system is run. We often talk about the Queen of England, but what never mentioned is the Corporation of London. Mm. And there's a dynamic which is actually played out, which a lot of people are not aware of. For instance, we've got a thing in this country in London called the Square Mile, and it has what they call the Mayor of London. Not the mayor, as they show to the world, his name is Sadiq Khan, not him. They have a mayor, a secret mayor of London. They also have a person in Parliament called a Remembrancer. Nobody knows him. Even you ask any English person, they don't even know who this person is. But he's not an elected official, but he's appointed by the Corporation of London to oversee the business of the Corporation of London. The Corporation of London, it heads back to Roman times. It actually, where it's actually built, there's a wall which the Romans built, because you've got to remember that London is named, it was a Roman name, it was Londinium, and they gave it a name, and from that you get London. But it's a Roman city and a Roman name. And that wall that they built, the Romans, the centre for the Corporation of London, their new building is right there. And all their rules, and it's actually a sovereign city in itself. The Corporation of London and the Square Mile is a sovereign city in itself. Actually, officially, it's not even part of London. It's not even part of England, believe it or not. It's actually tied into Washington, D.C. They type in by...
Brother Paul, is that tied into D.C., the Vatican... Or Vatican
Absolutely.
City
Absolutely.
And London.
The church trilogy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got you. I feel you. I know. Go ahead.
What Washington, D.C. represents the armory. The Vatican represents the religious part. And the Corporation of London represents the monetary part. Mm-hmm. And they control the money on the planet. On the planet.
On the planet.
Not in London. On the planet.
Yeah.
To recognize that. And not only that, the Queen, for instance, a part of their regalia, the Queen has to ask for permission. She has to ask for permission to go into the Square Mile. So who holds the power if she has to ask for permission? Now, people need to look this up and fully understand how this thing works, because they hide behind a lot of regalia and tradition and whatever, but they really hold the power.
So all that pomp and circumstance that people see, which I detest and can't stand, as you know, Paul. I hate the royals, all this royal. Because over here, Paul, they play it constantly. If you watch the news or the programs, they're always talking about Britain, Great Britain, the royal family, and the Queen this and all that. What's his name? Prince Philip. Damn, Prince Philip. That monk looked like he dead.
I saw him the other day.
I'm like, damn.
No, but I think that's a perfect strategy. Yeah, because that strategy is to keep the attention away from the real power. Who's controlling power?
Yeah.
Most of the information we get, even in the schools, is indoctrination. It's not education. It's actually you've been indoctrinated. So that is a perfect strategy. The real power is what I'm saying is the Corporation of London. And for people to understand the power on the planet and how this monetary thing is working, they need to understand how the Corporation of London works. Because the Queen and that stuff is a perfect distraction. It's an absolutely perfect distraction. And Markle, or whatever her name is, she is the absolute distraction. And maybe she didn't know what she was getting herself in, but trust me, that is just a total distraction. The most, you know, Britain is still controlling the most wealth coming out of Africa. There's no other country, not even France with its 14 African countries still paying colonial tax, gets as much money as the Corporation of London gets out of Africa or anywhere on the planet. Trust me on that. And you know, so it's for people to try and prompt themselves to look at the real powers instead of looking at the diversions.
And see, what continues to hold us is what has been impacting us from the beginning when Europeans did what they've done, particularly coming out of that medieval age. Because in that medieval age, they couldn't do too much. You know, they were fighting amongst themselves. But once they came out of that medieval age and they kicked the Moors out of Spain, they kicked the Sephardic Jews out of Spain, and they begin Martel and Charlemagne and all that kind of madness, and Marco Polo. They began to go around the world and taking everybody's stuff in the name of. And then they seem to have made that an ironclad agreement that no matter what, we're going to run the world. We may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together and we're going to run the world. You know.
I'm just going to say something very shortly. This is from my research. You know, you say they kicked the Moors out of out of Spain. The Moors was also in all over Europe. They were in England, everywhere they were.
That's right. You're right. They were in Germany. Yes.
Absolutely. But to me personally, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but when I look at it, I think the Moors played a treacherous part in our downfall. Because the Moors was absolutely involved in the transatlantic slave trade. They were involved.
Yeah.
Even before the transatlantic slave trade, from my investigation, they're the ones who showed the Europeans into North Africa and took them across to raid Africa, right? And, you know, even in England there, Sir Francis Bacon, this is another character people need to study, Sir Francis Bacon. Because Sir Francis Bacon was the Chancellor of the Exchequer in Great Britain. He is the one who drew up the plans called the New Atlantis. The plans for the New Atlantis was the establishment of what you call America. It was Sir Francis Bacon who drew that up. And from what I understand, he was a Moor too. Although he was a European, he was part of the structure. So the Moors wasn't this philanthropic type group who helped black people. Yeah, some of them were black, but a lot of them were black traitors and sellouts who worked with Sir Francis Bacon, laid out the plans, helped him to establish the New Atlantis, what you now call the New America. He's the one, Sir Francis Bacon. So, yeah, this treachery has been going on for a long time, but a lot of us played a part, just like we're playing today. We're playing the same game. This thing, you know, nothing changes under the sun. And that's the reality of our position today.
And that's the sad part. Brother Mickey, you got some comment?
No, I'm just soaking up all of this knowledge, man. I appreciate the knowledge that this brother is dropping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brother Paul brings it, man. He really does, and I appreciate him. And I pray for him because he's a truth seeker and a truth teller, and he's in the belly of the beast, as he's often told us. You know.
Well, hold on. Let me just correct you there. And I again, I don't mean to offend anybody. This country, Great Britain, is the mind of the beast.
Yes.
You are in the belly of the beast.
Okay.
This is where they draw up all the plans, the Tavistock Institute in London.
Yeah.
This is where they draw up all the policies and the strategies and to overthrow government, to work with the Catholic arm of the press, what they call the CIA, which came out of the Office of Strategic Studies. We know all this, you know. The Operation Paperclip, they shipped the Nazis out of Germany and took them to America. You know what could never happen in Britain? We could never have a German town. These so-called English would never accept that because of the Second World War. That could never happen. But you got it there in America. Most
people don't even
know that you have. You know what? In school, we never learn. I only heard it on the radio that you had a German town. That is never printed in any book in England, that you have a German town in America. Believe that. Mm-hmm. But I only learned it from listening to these radio stations that you have a German. I was quite surprised. I've never read that in all my schooling in Britain, that you had a German town. They would never accept that in Britain. I'm telling you that.
Well,
and this is how they played it. This is how their game was played.
Yeah, well, there are many German, aside from the Nazis that came over here or went to Argentina or went to Brazil, whatever. But Germans have been here for quite a while. In fact, Milwaukee in Wisconsin was settled by Germans and Poles, plenty. And many of them were beer barons, so they brought their beer. That's why Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is the beer capital. Well, used to be the beer capital because of Germans. And Germans are more adamant in their racism and ideas of their superiority than other European groups. It's not like like Minnesota, which is next to Wisconsin, which is settled by.
And let me just say, for the sake of argument, you know, the oxymoron about that is that genetically, these English people, so-called white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, their closest relatives in terms of their genetics is actually Germans. Can you believe that?
Yeah, yeah.
That is amazing. Well, this is the things when you learn and study, you recognize. It's a game they play. When they come to America, they give the idea that they're all united. But trust me, here in Europe, they're not united at all. They are fighting for power and control of the planet. That's what they're doing. And they're willing to kill each other. You know, you've got to look at the history. 64 million more people were killed in the Second World War.
Right.
They're willing to kill each other at the drop of a hat to maintain power. And
right.
That's, I think, the object they have over us. I don't think we're so willing to murder people off the planet just for the sake of material gain, but they are definitely that.
Exactly. And you're right. And you're right. We only have a couple of more minutes, Brother Mickey. I want to thank you. I want to thank Brother Paul for calling in. Just hang on. And, of course, Jay Nabantu. All those who call in and listen, and some call in and, you know, just to listen. And I appreciate that. In fact, the other day, man, I had so many callers on the queue. And I was impressed, because sometimes I do this program and I think I'm just throwing information out. But you know what? I'll continue to do it. I'll be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. Unless there's some extenuating circumstance, I'll be here. Brother Mickey, go ahead with some closing remarks, dear brother. Appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate the show. This is the kind of media that we need, because, as you know, the airwaves, whether we're talking about the internet, television, radio, is filled with a lot of foolishness, and it's very detrimental to our people. So the more outlets like this we have, the better. I'm always honored to be on here with you, Brother Oshie. So anytime you need me. You know, unfortunately, Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm trying to play my saxophone at that time. I'm taking some jazz improvisation classes.
Yeah,
But always, anytime, this show is a jewel. And anytime you need me, just give me a call. You know that.
I appreciate that. And you've been sending out some good information. In fact, this last piece, that's why I called you up. And you know, you've been on since I've been on, which is almost like I think. Almost 4 years I've been on, and you've been on here many times, and I appreciate that. And you will be on again. And if you can, I would definitely like to have you on because of the knowledge that you have, particularly on international issues. And of course, issues that are affecting our people. So I'm glad that when you brought this particular piece to our attention of the scramble for Africa, although I've been talking about that, you know what I'm saying? Because this is a program that, you know, our motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And that's where we are. So thank you, Brother Mickey. Appreciate it. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahorie. Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a great weekend. Peace, family.